Good afternoon, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to CDC's briefing. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Your lines are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may press star followed by the number one to ask a question. Please unmute your phones and state your name when prompted. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Katie Hoskin at CDC. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Michelle, and thank you all for joining us for an update on the lung injury investigation among people who use e-cigarette or vaping products. We are joined today by Dr. Anne Schuchat, Principal Deputy Director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and Dr. Schuchat will provide this week's update on our support of the lung injury investigation. We're also being joined today by Dr. Judy McMeekin, Deputy Associate Commissioner for Regulatory Affairs at the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. In addition, during our Q&A session, Dr. Brian King from CDC's response team will join us to answer any additional questions that you may have. I'll now turn the call over to Dr. Schuchat.
Thanks so much, Katie. Thank you all for joining us today. Unfortunately, the outbreak of pulmonary injury associated with e-cigarette use or vaping is continuing at a brisk pace. CDC is continuing our investigation together with state and local health departments and federal partners, including FDA. We are getting more information about cases that occurred earlier this year, as well as more recent ones. And unfortunately, we've now surpassed 1,000 lung injury cases in this outbreak. As of October 1st, 2019, 1,080 lung injury cases associated with the use of e-cigarette or vaping products have been reported to CDC from 48 states and the U.S. Virgin Islands. This condition is serious, and we continue to learn of additional deaths. There have been 18 deaths confirmed and reported to CDC from 15 states, and we know that additional deaths are under investigation. The increase of 275 cases since last week is a combination of new patients becoming ill in the past 2 weeks and recent reporting of previously identified patients. Consistent with the case definition, all reported patients have a history of using e-cigarettes or vaping products. As we have continued to get data for additional cases, the trends we reported last week persist. Most patients report a history of using THC-containing products, and most patients are male and young people. Out of the 1,080 cases, approximately 70% are male. Approximately 80% of patients are under 35 years old. More than a third of patients, or 37%, are under 21 years old. We've continued to assess what products patients have used, and we now have information for 578 patients, with information on substances used in e-cigarette or vaping products in the 3 months before symptom onset. We found that about 78% reported using THC-containing products and 37% reported using only THC-containing products. About 58% reported using nicotine-containing products and 17% reported using only nicotine-containing products. I wish we had more answers regarding the specific harmful products or components that are causing these illnesses. Let me describe some of the recent actions we're taking to help get answers. Recently, CDC has deployed additional staff to several states to assist with the investigation. We've conducted broad outreach to the clinical community to increase awareness of this illness. We've worked with clinicians and medical examiners community to provide timely updates, engage in their experience in caring for patients, and review assessments of those that have died from this concerning illness. We've convened clinical professional societies, both primary care and specialty, to help strengthen the detection, reporting, and management of cases. This ensures that our response and our interim clinical recommendations are informed by their direct experience caring for these patients. Together with FDA and public health partners, CDC has developed a comprehensive laboratory plan for continued testing of products, aerosol testing of substances produced by the products, and clinical pathology lung specimens from patients. We hope that this laboratory effort will provide additional information on the products, potential substances, and clinical findings associated with e-cigarette use or vaping. CDC is also leveraging the Laboratory Response Network to receive samples. This is an existing laboratory preparedness and response capability that's been a core component to the nation's public health response infrastructure for 20 years. CDC continues to use various platforms to ensure the public's aware of the most current information on this outbreak, including weekly updates to our website and through social media, as well as through routine telebriefings like this one. I cannot stress enough the seriousness of these lung injuries associated with e-cigarette use or vaping. This is a critical issue, and even while we learn more, we need to take steps to prevent additional cases. Given the continued occurrence of life-threatening new cases, CDC recommends that people refrain from using e-cigarette or vaping products, particularly those containing THC. Regardless of this investigation, e-cigarettes should not be used by youth, young adults, pregnant women, or people who've not previously used tobacco products. If you're concerned about your health after using an e-cigarette product, contact your healthcare provider, or you can call your local poison control center at 1-800-222-1222. And I'd like now to invite Dr. Judy McMeekin of the FDA to share an update about the FDA's findings.
Thank you, Dr. Shuka, for those important updates and for the continued collaboration. My name is Judy McMeekin, and I serve as the FDA's Deputy Associate Commissioner for Regulatory Affairs. The FDA continues to work closely with our federal, state, and local partners as quickly as possible to gather more information about these distressing incidents. This is a critical public health investigation, and collaboration is integral to our success. Today, I want to provide a few updates on our extensive work. We remain focused on better understanding whether there is a relationship between any specific products or substances and the reported illnesses. Work includes collecting critical details about the products or substances involved, where they were purchased, and how they were being used. Based on our analysis of samples from the states, there does not currently appear to be one product or substance involved in all of the cases. For example, in many cases, but not all, patients have acknowledged recent use of products containing THC, and some have reported the use of e-cigarettes containing nicotine, or both THC products and nicotine products. We are leaving no stone unturned in following all potential leads regarding any particular product, constituent, or compound that may be at issue. The FDA's work to investigate the illnesses includes field sample collections in coordination with states, sample analysis, criminal and civil investigations, and coordination with state and federal partners. The FDA has received or collected over 440 samples from 18 states to date, and those numbers continue to increase. We are working quickly and thoroughly to analyze the samples. As noted in a recent telebriefing, investigating this crisis is FDA's top priority. Our investigators and agents are following every possible lead, which includes traveling throughout the country and attempting to gather any available evidence, including devices, pods, cartridges, diluting agents, and more. FDA is focused on identifying the products that are making people ill and following the supply chain to the source. FDA is not pursuing any actions associated with personal use of any vaping products. Our interest is in the supply chain. But as Acting FDA Commissioner Sharpless has said, if we determine that someone is manufacturing or distributing illicit adulterated vaping products that caused illness or death for personal profit, we would consider that to be a criminal act. Getting to the bottom of these respiratory illnesses is a top priority for all of the federal and state agencies involved, and we're committed to taking appropriate action as the facts emerge. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Michelle, we're now ready to take questions.
Thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, you may press star 1. Please unmute your phones and state your first and last name when prompted. Again, that is star 1 for any questions. One moment, please. Dr. John Torres from NBC News, you may go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi, this is Dr. John Torres. Thanks for taking the question here. Do you believe it's the black market devices that are mostly responsible for these vaping-related lung injuries?
Thank you for that question. You know, we do have a lot of concerns about black market sources. I think it's premature for us to rule out other concerning products. The Illinois and Wisconsin report from last week did find that most of the individuals had gotten their THC-containing products from informal sources off the street, not from brick-and-mortar shops. But at this stage in the investigation, we really need to keep an open mind and recognize that sources in one part of the country may not be the same as elsewhere. There is a lot we do not know about what's in various e-cigarette or vaping products and what harms they can have. But I think this black market concern is a high one for us.
Thank you.
Next question.
Thank you. And our next question comes from, one moment, please. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, you may press star 1. Lena Sun from WAPO, you may go ahead.
That would be the Washington Post. Thank you. I have two questions, one for the FDA. It's been a while since you've shared any of your findings with us of what you've discovered in all of this sampling, and I was wondering if you could offer a little bit more detail. And the second question is for both of you. The New England Journal this week published a letter from Mayo Clinic pathologists who said that they didn't see any evidence of markers for lipoid pneumonia in 17 of their patients. That contradicts or is in conflict with the MMWR that CDC put out a couple weeks ago from North Carolina, where there were 5 patients who were diagnosed with lipoid pneumonia based on the lipid-laden macrophages that were found in the lungs. Lipid-laden macrophages were also found in the lungs of 6 patients with the University of Utah. I was wondering whether, Dr. Shukat, perhaps you could sort of help us understand that. And whether the discrepancy could be a function of the way those biopsies were processed. And is the CDC analyzing, taking some of these autopsy results and analyzing? Is there anything you can share with us?
Yeah, thank you for those two questions. I'll answer the second one first, and then we'll let FDA chime in about the additional laboratory results. The report in the New England Journal is quite helpful, a series of 17 patients with pathologic analysis. You also mentioned the small number, the 5 or 6 cases from North Carolina and the Utah report. I think it's early days in understanding the full clinical spectrum and the pathology of lung injury following e-cigarette use or vaping. The part of the plan that I mentioned, the laboratory testing plan, includes pathology specimens with control specimens to try to get a better feel for the spectrum of conditions. The North Carolina report that was in our MMWR came from a group of clinicians in North Carolina, and I think it was very helpful in raising questions and alarms. I think we really have the feeling right now that there may be a lot of different nasty things in e-cigarette or vaping products, and they may cause different harms in the lung. We also know that pathology analysis needs to be done quite carefully with appropriate stains and appropriate controls. And we hope over the months ahead that we'll learn a lot more about the spectrum of lung conditions that these exposures are having. I think the main point that I'd like to make is these are really serious injuries in the lung, and we don't know how well people will recover from them, whether lung damage may be permanent. And so the glimpses that the pathologists are getting are very helpful in trying to get to some kinds of pathogenesis, but we have a lot more to learn. Let me go to Dr. McMeek and on the FDA question.
Sure. Just as a follow-up, this is a complex investigation, unlike any we've seen, and the FDA is working quickly and thoroughly in testing the samples. Many of the samples have contained little to no liquid, which limits the number and types of tests that are able to be conducted on each submission. And the samples we are continuing to evaluate show a mix of results, and no one substance has been identified in all of the samples tested.
Next question, operator.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Mike Stobie with Associated Press. You may go ahead, sir.
Hi, thank you for taking. Dr. McMeek, can you say a little
could,
more?
Could you speak up, Mike? We can't hear you very well.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, that's better.
Okay, thanks. For Dr. McMeek, could you say just a little bit more about of the samples that have did you say 340, was that the number from 1860? How many were you able to analyze? And could you say, even if no single substance was seen in all of them, is there a substance or chemical or anything that has been found most often? And Dr. Shukin, could you just say a little bit more about the deaths and how many of those 18 have autopsies been performed and what's the median age and did they all vape this same thing, or did they all have a pre-existing condition? Any other light you can shed on those?
Yes. Yeah, let me let FDA begin.
Sure. I just want to clarify that the FDA has received or collected over 440 samples from 18 states to date, and those numbers continue to increase. Our samples include both devices and products that contain liquid collected directly from consumers, hospitals, and from state offices. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
She didn't answer the question, though. Could you say a little bit more about what has been found most often in those samples and how many of them you've been able to analyze?
So our testing is not complete. However, preliminary results are revealing some products contain THC at concentrations ranging from 14% to 76%, and some THC products that also contain a combination of THC and vitamin E acetate ranging from 31 to 88%.
So Mike, in terms of deaths, I don't have individual line list underlying conditions. What I can tell you, though, is that the median age is nearly 50. It's 49 and a half. So the fatalities that we're seeing tend to be a bit older than the overall disease burden. That probably isn't that surprising. The other thing I can The other thing that I can say is that the age range of fatalities that I'm aware of that have been reported to us is in the 20s to in the 70s. And so, as you know, we don't provide individual identifiable information, but it's as old as the 70s that one of the deaths was apparently. But again, the average age or the median age, is almost 50, a bit higher than what we're seeing in the overall population. The small numbers of deaths that we have information on so far, I mean, it's small in terms of statistics. It's very large in terms of tragedy. But there's a higher proportion of females represented among fatal cases preliminarily than in the full population of people affected, where we have about 70% male. I think that it wouldn't be surprising for older people potentially with underlying conditions to not withstand an insult like this, a lung injury as well. But again, with only data on less than two dozen
deaths, it may be too early to draw conclusions. We do think that the proportion hospitalized and in intensive care unit is just terrible with this condition, and that we really want to prevent it. Next question, operator.
Thank you. Dan Vergano from BuzzFeed News. You may go ahead, sir.
Thanks very much. I have two questions. The first is the syndrome defined well enough that you can say that the onset is rapid? You said you still have cases going on. Does that mean that there are products out there still right now that are making people sick? The second question is, what advice do you have for adult smokers who switch from tobacco to e-cigarettes as a way to wean themselves off?
Yes, thank you for those two questions. We're concerned that risky product is still available, and that's one of the reasons that we have intensified our recommendations or warnings. We haven't seen a measurable drop-off in the occurrence of new cases, and so we don't feel that either individuals have changed their behavior or the products are gone. We know that there've been that there's a lot going on to try to get risky products off the market, but we are worried that there's plenty of risky products still out there. Now, I think the special case of adults who've used e-cigarettes to help stop smoking cigarettes, we really don't want people to return to smoking cigarettes. Obviously, there's a lot of individual decision-making involved with adults who are currently using e-cigarettes, and we recommend they consult with their healthcare provider. There are a number of FDA-approved cessation devices or strategies that, together with counseling, can be helpful, but we really don't want people to go back to smoking cigarettes. Our recommendations have intensified as we continue to see new cases. But we really don't want people who are adult smokers to go back to smoking cigarettes.
And is it established from the new cases that the onset of this illness is rapid? People smoke and within a week they're showing up in ER, or is it unclear there's maybe longer-term cases of onset?
What I would say from the information that's available so far is that many people are longtime users or frequent users and may or may not have changed what their habits. The time of symptoms to hospitalization can be fairly short in terms of a week or so. But the question of which was the exposure or was it the accumulated exposure that led to the condition, we don't know. What I meant by saying so many cases, you know, of the 275 new cases this week, about half of them were hospitalized within the past 2 weeks, suggests to me that there have been risky exposures out there in the past month or so, despite the warnings we've made.
Thank you.
Next question, operator.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Helen Branswell with STAT. You may go ahead.
Hi, thanks very much for taking my question. I wanted to ask the other side of the timeline. Dr. Schuchat, you said some of the 275 newly reported cases are old cases that have, you know, been reported into the system. Can you talk about how far back you're seeing cases now? Because, of course, you know, it's the big question is, has this always been happening, and is it just being seen now? And I'm just wondering if you think that there was a point where it started, or if, as evidence accumulates, you're seeing cases further and further back.
Yes, thank you. What we call the epidemic curve, or the curve that shows the date of admission and the date of symptom onset for the individual cases, I believe we're intending to be posting that every week, updating that each week on our website. That goes back to March 31st of this year. But what I would say is in the literature, we know that there's sporadic cases of a condition that sounds like it's the same thing. But what we've seen is this increase in cases. In terms of the epidemic curve that we have, it's really June, July, where we start to see a lot of cases. There are just a handful in the March, April, May timeline compared to what we started to see June, July, and then, of course, in August. Now, there's probably some recognition bias in terms of the summer, because we've been raising the alarm on this, but, you know, there,
that there's probably been isolated cases for much longer than going back. But I refer you to our website for that curve. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Denise Grady with New York Times. You may go ahead.
Hi, thank you. In examining what people are vaping, are you looking at the devices as well as the fluids or other things that people are vaping? And is there any concern or much information about whether there's something going on with the devices themselves?
Let me begin, and then I'll let FDA continue. The Illinois-Wisconsin group found that there was a common pathway in terms of prefilled cartridges, but not in terms of devices. But what I can say is that based on the intensive interviews that have been done in a couple of the states, we're modifying, simplifying, and honing in our interview form to understand, to get better information about both devices and products. In terms of the testing, in addition to testing substance, we think it's important for us to test the aerosol that the substances produce. But in terms of device testing, let me let FDA make any comments that they'd like to.
Sure. Our samples include both devices and products that contain liquids collected directly, you know, from the consumers and from states. Many of the samples, like I said, contain very little to no liquid, and that really limits the number and types of tests that we're able actually to conduct.
Thanks. Operator, we have time for two more questions.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Erica Edwards with NBC News.
Hey, thank you. One quick thing. I wanted to confirm what was said about the vitamin E acetate a little earlier. I believe I heard the percentage was between 31 and 88% of those THC products. And the other question I had was just a little bit more broad. I mean, this is not like the other outbreaks like the seasonal flu where we know it's going to get better in the spring. So I'm wondering, do you expect these lung injuries and deaths to continue rising for the foreseeable future? I mean, what is it going to take to get this under control?
Let me start and then I'll let FDA answer. I just want to qualify a little bit about the testing of specimens. There can be multiple specimens from an individual patient that were tested, so a range of vitamin E, you need to know that there may be multiple positives from one single person. The other thing is, I believe the range that was presented wasn't all the samples positive, but in an individual sample, what percentage of that liquid was vitamin E? So rather than the full range of samples all had vitamin E or had, you know. So let me answer the other question and then let FDA comment further on the – well, actually, let me stop and let FDA comment on the vitamin E results that they shared.
So as a reminder, our testing is not complete. However, the preliminary results are revealing some products contain THC at concentrations ranging from 14 to 76%, and some THC products that also contain a combination of THC and vitamin E acetate ranging from 31 to 88%. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. And then I think your second question was a really important one about what is it going to take for this to go away. You know, I think there's two issues to consider. One is individuals using e-cigarettes or vaping products. If there's a decrease in use of potentially risky products, we would hope to prevent cases. And the second thing is identifying the multiple sources that are possibly problematic and getting them out of circulation. I think the second may take a lot longer than the first, and to be on the safe side right now, we really want to caution people that it is pretty much impossible for you to know what is in the e-cigarette or vaping product that you're getting, particularly
THC-containing products bought off the street or bought from social sources. And in light of the seriousness of this condition, we really don't think using those products is safe right now. But I think we really need to work hard to get to the risky products and to ideally have our message be more targeted. But as long as, you know, people are getting this ill and dying, we want to make sure you know that we're not optimistic that tomorrow we're going to be able to pull all the risky stuff off the market. But thank you for that question, because we are concerned with hundreds of new cases reported each week that we're looking at a very concerning outbreak, very difficult to control. So, operator, last question.
Thank you. Our last question comes from Kathleen Doheny from WebMD. You may go ahead.
Thank you. Two quick questions. Is there any way to predict whether this has peaked? And what would you say to the legions of people on social media that I see saying it's perfectly safe to vape THC from if it was bought from a licensed dispensary? What would you say to those people? Thanks.
The data that we're getting does not suggest this has peaked. It doesn't suggest this is declining, and we'll need more observation. In case this is going up, we wanted to intensify our warnings. We really are taking this very seriously. Obviously, individuals will make choices about their own health and their own behavior. And individual states that have licensed dispensaries are taking steps to assure that what they regulate is safe. So we're not interfering with state regulation. We're just saying that right now it's very difficult for a consumer to know what they have.
Even if it's from a licensed?
That's really a state-by-state question, I think.
Okay.
And, of course, just to reiterate, last week, the Illinois and Wisconsin report found that most of the individuals got their THC-containing products off the street, not from a licensed dispensary. However, that was a geographically focused outbreak. So we really don't know if that's generalizable yet. And I think it's, of course, we know there's a lot of conversation out there about what is and isn't safe. And personally, with all the data that I've been seeing, I don't know what safe is right now. So let me just thank everybody for being part of today's telebriefing, and thank the FDA and the state and local partners who are working so hard to try to understand this and get to the bottom of this. We really are working hard to try to get answers that we hope will be useful, but we think that given the continued occurrence of life-threatening new cases, we're recommending people refrain from using e-cigarettes or vaping products, particularly those containing THC, particularly those bought off the street. Thank you all.
And for reporters, if you have additional questions, you can call us at 404-639-3286 or send us an email at media@cdc.gov. And Michelle, this concludes our briefing today.
Thank you. This concludes today's conference call. You may go ahead and disconnect at this time.